This is Mae Brussel. It's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove. This is broadcast number 655, June 25th, 1984. Now to update another favorite subject of mine, the biotech that is long suppressed in the news. That's the company that began the investigation of Edwin Meese because Mrs. Meese had $15,000 to give to this Dr. Bryan just hours literally after the inauguration, and her friend Edwin Thomas was handing over a lot of money to biotech, and I did many broadcasts on biotech and their linked corporations. There's a story by Howard Kurtz in the Washington Post this past week. Meese family advisor reports a gift of $18,000 from biotech president. Now, Edwin Thomas was supposed to get an $18,000 in forgiven interest to Mr. Edwin Thomas. But last time we saw the news, Edwin Thomas was giving money to biotech. I know that these are two high-level spy organizations, and Meese right in the middle of it, washing money, entangling money, or passing money through to other forces. There are a lot of ways to explain the money, because the Meeses needed money. They didn't have to buy in a company like this that didn't have any guaranteed stock or security. That was a hard way to send three kids, or two, to college. One's out here at Fort Ord right now in the Army. The Washington Post says Edwin Thomas, who advised the family of White House counselor Edwin Meese to buy into biotech, received a gift of $18,000 in forgiven interest. The gift was made in connection with two loans to Thomas from biotech. So now biotech is giving a loan to the Thomases instead of the Thomases putting the money into biotech. President Earl W. Bryan, it doesn't say Dr. Earl Bryan, from R-H-E-W out here in California with Meese and Reagan. Earl W. Bryan, according to the Thomas Financial Disclosure Statement released this week, it said that Meese's initial failure to disclose their $15,000 interest-free loan from Thomas that he gave to them and then they passed on to Bryan was used to buy biotech stock for the Meese family. Thomas is now head of the General Services Administration in San Francisco, and Mr. Cortomanci will be head of the General Services Administration in the Washington National, the whole for the whole country, when Reagan, if he wins the election. According to Thomas's financial statement, he lent between $15,000 and $50,000 at 14% interest. Remember, I questioned where he got the money to invest in biotech. He lent it, but Bryan forgave $18,000 in interest on the loan that was secured by unrecorded second mortgage on the Thomas's home in Squaw Valley. Thomas reported a $9,900 interest-free loan from Dr. Bryan that he used to buy into Financial News Network. That's one of the newspapers that Bryan also owns, a doctor, the Financial News Network with its computers, one of the affiliates of biotech. Thomas reported he owned biotech stock, which he sold for $15,000 to $50,000. Originally, he was supposed to have invested in the company. Now it turns out that it was loaned. Bryan headed California's health department when Ronald Reagan was governor, and a longtime acquaintance of Meese. Imagine, they're finally putting in the Washington Post that he was an HEW out here. That's when Jolly West had the mind control program, and they were all part of the electrodes and implants, and I'll do more on that in a minute. And then it goes into Mrs. Meese, who was advised by Mr. Thomas to put into biotech. If it's confusing for you, it is confusing to the Washington Post and everybody else, because he was supposed to have been investing in the country, but it turns out that it was a loan with no interest, and that they're changing their financial records as the story unfolds. Now, biotech, I gave on this program the list of subsidiaries, the ones we know, and I was suspicious of them because they're into interferon and cancer and pap smear, and I questioned the interferon with the possibility of AIDS. Well, just this week, it doesn't mention these companies, and I don't know, I have to check all of these out. It was just in the Wall Street Journal, June 22nd, the United States agency grants licenses to develop blood tests for AIDS. The Department of Health and Human Services gave five licensees, hardly competitive, you'll see, because it was given so quickly, to companies to develop and distribute a blood test required for immune deficiency syndrome. A spokesman for the federal agency said the companies will get samples of human cancer virus. The scientists at the National Cancer Institute, which I don't trust, and the Disease Control Center in Georgia, which I absolutely don't trust, have isolated the virus as a probable cause of AIDS. I think they could isolate, and I also think they could make it. It says that it belongs to the human T-cell leukemia virus family. Now, they said, we're the only people who have been able to grow the virus down there in Atlanta. Isn't that cute? So the Public Health Service has the patent on the method of growing the virus and also of distributing, I'm sure. Now, these are the companies that will be working on this. So everybody who gets a blood transfusion or a test for AIDS, they'll know who the homosexuals are, who people think they have AIDS. Abbott Laboratories, North Chicago, Illinois. Electronucleonics in Fairfield, New Jersey. Litton Bionetics Incorporated in Kensington, Maryland. Litton Industries, that makes the INS service for the airplanes that went bonkers with Larry McDonald on there. Litton, that does all the detail work for the military, Hyundai's for the military, and highly technical work, and also your wonderful microwave ovens, which I wouldn't own. Litton Bionetics Incorporated is going to get a contract for working on the blood and the viruses. Trivenol Genetech Diagnostics of Cambridge, Massachusetts, a joint effort between DuPont in Wilmington, Delaware, and Biotech Research Laboratory of Rockville, Maryland. Now, that's the one I have to check in this next week to see if, by any chance, Dr. Earl Bryan is part of the Biotech Research Laboratory out of Rockville, Maryland. Also, the Trivenol Genetech in Deerfield, Illinois, and Genetech Incorporated of South San Francisco. Blood banks, hospitals, and physicians will use their tests to screen blood donations, and the annual sale from the government for kits on testing AIDS will be $100 million. The annual sale for AIDS disease, this contract of selling these tests, $100 million. Now, they apologize that about 25 companies applied for the AIDS licenses, but the selection of these few companies was based on their visibility, their ability to package and market and distribute the kits, and they had to work fast. They said it was an emergency, so you have to understand that very few people got a chance to bid on this. They hand-picked ones. It's a public health emergency, and it went to those people. So now we have to check up if Earl Bryan has a finger, particularly Biotech Research Laboratory, Rockville, Maryland. Now, getting on to another scandal of Ronald Reagan's involving the HUD, and that office has been in the news quite a bit lately. I don't know if you have seen articles about the housing, urban, and development, HUD, run by Mr. Pierce, who was selected by J. Edgar Hoover to be the token black. If Martin Luther King weren't the Messiah, they wanted somebody like Mr. Pierce. Now, I talked at length about Thomas Doherty, a member of the Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee for House Energy and Commerce, who was found dead at the height of the investigation of the Sinfuel. And there's, of course, the story read Prober's death unconnected to his work. Now, here's another murder of a person whose name is in the news regarding the SUD scandals. This is out of the New York Times. Stephen J. Bollinger is dead, assistant housing secretary in Savannah, Georgia, June 19th. Stephen Bollinger, the assistant secretary of housing and urban development, died apparently of a heart attack. 36 years old. He was attending a meeting. His body was found in the hotel room. No evidence of foul play. I guess he got the swale treatment. He was assistant secretary for community planning and development, appointed by President Reagan in April of 81. He was there to address 1,700 officials at the 51st annual convention, and he was found dead in the hotel room. Now, he died June the 18th in Georgia. But before his death, June the 4th, and I'm not talking again about little columns. I'm talking about half-page articles in the Washington Post or in other papers, huge stories. They run like this. This is the first one, June the 3rd, by Howard Kurtz, Washington Post. Staff opposition overruled. HUD grant went to their ex-colleagues. The senior officials of the Department of Housing and Urban Development were overruled. They overruled their career civil servants last month when they approved of a $6.7 million grant for a housing project that went to somebody that used to work with them. And this Samuel Pierce Jr. is mentioned. He's the head of HUD. But through this article, they mention the person who is now deceased. They acknowledge that they were pressed for approval of the grant in meeting with HUD Assistant Secretary Stephen J. Bollinger, who oversees the program. That's the fellow who's dead, and his name is in the Washington Post. Bollinger and Mr. Wilson worked with HUD staff, and the long article in the Washington Post is about the scandal of their giving this particular contract somebody through a buddy system that the staff didn't want. The Wall Street Journal, May the 4th, has an article, Democrats in Congress Seek HUD Inquiry into Contract to Men with Links to the Energy, and Wall Street Journal mentions Mr. Bollinger, who will very nicely be dead 14 days later. Stephen Bollinger, an assistant secretary who oversees the grants, he's mentioned in the Washington Post. Another half-page story in the Washington Post, June the 5th, the next day. 500,000 HUD contract is blocked as inflated. And it tells about an overpriced contract, another problem, another contract that was given to a Washington consulting firm. The other was up in New England. This is another firm, and a controversy of HUD, again, granting these contracts. That is June the 5th. Bollinger has just a week and a half to live. Then there was another story this past week. You may have seen, you couldn't miss it, June 23rd. Double mystery in the case of the orphan embryos. And it's about Marius Rios and his wife, Elsa Rios, who she had a child by another marriage, and the child mysteriously was shot in the head, a 10-year-old girl named Claudia, who was shot in the brain with a bullet in her forehead. And they wanted a child of their own. They each had a child from another marriage, and evidently she had trouble getting pregnant. Then the couple went to Australia. But the double mystery, which is a quadruple mystery, the San Francisco Chronicle, taken from the L.A. Times, again, not a wire service story, is the one daughter was shot, the 10-year-old is shot in the head. Then the Rios go down to Argentina. They'd been to Australia to see about conceiving, and it wasn't his fertilized egg. It was hers that was taken. They were going to match with somebody else. They go to Argentina and adopt another child whose papers are on the airplane when they're dead. They fly a Chilean airline that goes over the Andes where they're murdered. The two parents are dead, but the mystery is about the plane crash because the charred bodies of the two are found. The adopted baby isn't there, but the papers, the American embassy gave them a adoption paper, and they were flying back, returning with the child. But the punchline of all this story, of the embryo story and the dead daughter and the dead parents and the missing adopted child that went through the American agency by the name of Joshua that cleared the American agency, at the bottom line, remember, this is the multimillionaire who the embryos would go to, the money would go to. Rios apparently, not for sure now, like apparent heart attacks, apparently made his money in real estate. This is down in San Diego, right around the Edwin Meese country and the DeLorean and the Pete Wilson and the various Mr. Dominelli and the mob scandals going on there and missing money and so forth. Rios apparently, no explanation, made his money in real estate ventures. He operated a company called RGR Associates, which managed low-income housing projects for the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD again. Just when you read about the parents that were killed in the crash, the visit to Argentina, the Chilean airplane, the baby they adopted that isn't on the plane, and now he's working for Mr. Pierce and the late Mr. Bollinger from HUD. Bollinger was already dead when this story came out. And then another story from the wire services, June 24th, HUD in the Reagan era, abuse or reform, and it goes into the various problems, the scandals, people that have left HUD from San Francisco, from the South, and it details the scandals of the organization from Cleveland and Pittsburgh and so forth, where they're being investigated. But the important thing is that the HUD was under fire in many newspapers, the wire services, the Washington Post, and the scandalous stories of the way their money is going and how it's being wasted, like the Sinfuel. And then the man who's giving the loans and grants is dead in a hotel room in Savannah, Georgia. The reason these stories are important about the Sinfuel investigator or the man from HUD is that I have about 30 deaths that I'm updating each week, one or two or three for you, but they are falling like flies, and it is more scandalous than you can visualize. Now, to update the Marvin Pancos trial, because this isn't syndicated in all your papers, and people are calling me, even from California or around the country, what is going on? It's not on the wire services any more than Western Gold's has been. I'll give you the main key stories of the Pancos trial of the murder of Vicki Morgan. 1 July the 11th, the first witness was Vicki's mother. Her name is Connie Laney. And the day before she was killed, she told her mother that she didn't want to live in the apartment with Marvin Pancos. It wouldn't work out, and that she wanted to go to her mother's home. I'm taking time out 1 minute. Do you mind till we're done? Because it makes noise. It's picked up on the tape. Okay. We have a guest here in the room, and it's better to wait till the program's over. It's taped, and he doesn't know that. And so it was played on other stations. We get the rustling of records here. Okay. The first day of this July 11th story, the mother was told by Vicki that she didn't want to move an apartment the day after she was supposed to move. That she was murdered, and that next day she was supposed to move, and she wanted to go to her mother's home. And while she was out, she went with a person who she's writing a book with about Bloomingdale and the kitchen cabinet of Ronald Reagan. While she was out, Marvin Pancos, according to her mother, showed her a suicide note, apparently, again the word apparently, written by Vicki. Now, Vicki wasn't present to say she wrote it. He showed it to the mother, so it could have been forged very easily. She's writing notes. They have all the notes and books. And the man who's writing the book has been named as a suspect in the murder of Vicki Morgan. But apparently it was written by her, hasn't been verified by ink or fingerprints, that she really wanted to die. And so they would say that Pancos did her a favor. Now, Arthur Behrens, one of the attorneys for Vicki Morgan, said out in front of the court and also in court that someone else killed Vicki. From the start, there are a multitude of other persons who had legitimate and serious motives that want to see her dead, and that their motive was to prevent the showing of videotapes depicting Morgan having sex with Bloomingdale and government officials. Now, July the 12th, the next day, this is the L.A. Herald. The other was the L.A. Times. Some more of Vicki Morgan. Stanley Weisberg, the prosecutor, said that the motive was that she had a bleak future, she was agitated, and that Pancos was treated as a slave boy, and their relationship was just not getting along, and that's why she was killed. But Pancos told Vicki's mother before her death, the night before she died, they suggested that he wanted Vicki to go to his home, his grandmother's home that night, and Vicki wanted to go to her mother's, and they were discussing where she would sleep. And there was a quotation in the newspaper where Pancos said to Vicki's mother, "No, she can't go to your place," that he was going to resolve his problems with her once and for all. Now, why her mother went away and left him with Vicki Morgan is not explained at all, that he was going to resolve it. Now, her son had a baseball bat at their apartment, and when they went to in Pancos' car to pick up her son, Todd, who wanted to lift home from school that same day that she was going to be killed in the evening, Vicki's mother saw the baseball bat in Pancos' automobile and wondered why he took it out of Todd's room. And he said, "Well, you never know what you'll need it for." Now, Morgan was, when they came to help her move, the day that before she was killed or the day she was killed, she was upstairs asleep with Gordon Basich, B-A-S-I-C-H-I-S, Basichius. And Pancos was downstairs talking to the mother, and she went over to the apartment to look at an apartment with Basichius that Pancos was going to share with her. And this was the time that Pancos shows the mother the apparent suicide note. Now, that day in the L.A. Herald, it said Arthur Behrens again said that the videotapes existed, and Morgan had sex with another woman. He's specific. Vicki Morgan, one other woman, and four people from the Reagan administration. So he not only said people in the Reagan administration, but he mentioned four men and two women. The next article in the L.A. Herald, Sharon Porto, a friend of Vicki Morgan's mother, testified that Vicki Morgan was working on a book about her affair with Alfred Bloomingdale, a member of Reagan's kitchen cabinet. And the victim's mother told her the book would be Morgan's memoirs. It was going to be about Bloomingdale and the government and people in the government. And one of the people mentioned was Edwin Meese. That was the one that she heard. Now, this was in the L.A. Herald, but not on the wire services. Arthur Behrens, again, told people that he suspected and knew that they killed Vicki Morgan for a political reason because of political figures in the Reagan administration. Now, the prosecution attorney, Stanley Weisberg, objected to the grounds of mentioning Edwin Meese, a particular person, in the court, and court judge David Horowitz had a 10-minute conference and decided that no further questions about political figures could be asked during this trial. Here's a man who wants to be the attorney general of the United States, and the judge orders that you can't mention them in the trial. But so that is locked up in the court for the time being. But they did confirm that she was writing this book, and they have subpoenaed the book, if they haven't erased the pages. And the book is in the property of Gordon Bassicius, and it is it's not going to be public record. The book is sealed, but it is part of the trial. Another story from the L.A. Times, Morgan planned to name names, and that again brings Edwin Meese. Then a story in the L.A. Herald, Ryder tells of his fight with Morgan. Now, this is that Ryder, Gordon Bassicius. The week before she was murdered, he said, I shoved her. There was an argument. She was hysterical. There was a point. I grabbed her arms, sat her forcibly down in the chair. Now, Bassicius, she said at the trial, the altercation came because Morgan wanted to terminate her professional and romantic involvement with him. That means that he would have no more hands on the book that she was writing about Reagan and the kitchen cabinet, Bassicius. So she was taking, after all, the personal relationship wasn't much because she wasn't going to move into an apartment with him. She was moving in with Pancoast and not with Bassicius. So it had to be not the personal because she could choose to move where she wanted, but it was the professional, the book. The defense lawyers claim that there is no physical evidence linking Pancoast to the crime, but believe that Bassicius is absolutely a suspect in the Morgan slaying. According to the newspaper, in quotes, he was losing the book and his personal relationship with her. That was up in the air at the time, and in this time frame, he had the opportunity, as Pancoast did, to kill Vicki Morgan. So Bassicius has been named. He was named before Pancoast was arrested as a suspect in the murder. Bassicius was called to the witness stand, and he spoke about talking to Vicki Morgan the night that she was killed, but he didn't say what he did in the interim, or at least it's not in the newspaper before she was killed. Under cross-examination by Barron, Bassicius admitted that he had been romantically involved with Morgan for the 7 months of her life while they worked on the book, but he admitted that it was during an argument the week before she died that he got tough and started to really crack her down, sat her in a chair, and was bruising her upper arms and collarbone because she was ranting and raving. He said he tried to apologize for forcing her into the chair when she told him their relationship was over, and he testified that Morgan told me the names of a number of people in the course of the book who would be named in the book. Then again, the prosecution, who wants Neil Pancoast, protested when Barron's asked Bassicius to name those names, and the judge upheld the objection. Before the trial got underway, Bassicius was ordered by the prosecutor to turn over the court portions of the unfinished manuscript that will remain under court seal. Then the following article, June 16th, the attorneys subpoena Edwin Meese to appear in the Pancoast trial. L.A. Herald, it says, despite the subpoena, defense attorneys are pessimistic that they will be able to make Meese testify. And the implication is the attorneys subpoena Meese. Despite the subpoena, they are pessimistic that he will show up. This is a man who didn't answer subpoenas for 3 years on the transition funds and the millions of dollars that were handed out to Helene Von Dahm and Alexander Haig and Mr. Califano and their buddies. But he wouldn't answer those subpoenas. He wants to be the attorney general, and they questioned whether he would answer them. And then alongside of that is a story, Meese's role hasn't changed at the White House. While all this is going on out in California, White House, this is Washington Post, White House counselor Edwin Meese Third said yesterday that except for a brief period, he's carrying on the same responsibilities he's done during the process of waiting his nomination. He is waiting for counsel Jacob Stein to investigate the misreporting of Mises' finances. Stein isn't supposed to go into the Vicky Morgan story, and I understand from the news this late afternoon that the Cartergate has been hushed. Now, Mises, it said during Air Force One transatlantic flight from London, he was during this flight that he was very welcome among Reagan's crowd. He attended the economic summit. I'll bet you he was over in Europe asking Paul Marcinkus how do you avoid a subpoena for 3 years, getting advice from the Pope, because Edwin Meese was taken off for the economic summit at the time of their investigating his reporting. He should be home getting his financial papers straight. What can he do at an economic summit when he can't even account for $15,000 or where his shoelaces come from, all the nefarious money that he's dangling around? But he was off with the President of the United States on Air Force One, just as the Pope is talking in Switzerland about economic summits. Mises at the World Economic Summit. No wonder our banks are in such bad straits. So then the one following article, Mises faces subpoena in Morgan trial. One said he was subpoenaed, and then the other one comes out. One was the Houston Post saying he received it. And the other one says, we are trying to subpoena Meese as a witness, but we haven't served him yet. We're having trouble finding him. I haven't seen much of him recently. Have you? This is the Houston Post. Under cross-examination, Sergeant William Welch conceded that there hadn't been physical evidence, anything to link the baseball bat to Marvin Pancoast, and there were no fingerprints in the house to link him to the murder. When asked by the defense, the police department, why they didn't look at the tapes, Sergeant Welch said he saw videotapes in the room where Vicky Morgan was murdered, and he assumed that they were commercial movies. So they asked him, being this is the mistress of Alfred Bloomingdale from the Intelligence Advisory Board, the kitchen cabinet, his mistress for 10 years, living with all kinds of heads of states and kings and Bernie Kornfeld and you know what. Why, when asked by the defense why he didn't look at the tapes, the police sergeant said, I didn't go to there to watch movies, counselor. I went there to conduct an investigation. I didn't go there to watch movies. And remember, the police department said I had more important things to do. Well, one more scandal. We got a half a minute here. The L.A. grand jury investigates Mr. Charles Zwick, the director of USIA. They're trying to decide whether to prosecute him for the secret taping of calls. The L.A. County Grand Jury has launched a criminal investigation into the USIA Charles Wick's secret taping with the Los Angeles Times reporter Richard Bergholz. So that is going on in Los Angeles. So those are a few scandals, a few murders related to the Reagan scandals, the Sinfuel, the HUD, the Alfred Bloomingdale, three murders tonight. I'll give you more murders next week. They're piling up faster than you can imagine. It is totally scandalous that this man can get away with this. I hope that some of you that get these tapes and get the sheets that go with them, or you can order them, send copies of this broadcast. If you don't make tapes, send the sheets. Write to congressmen. Write to the names I've mentioned. Write to the reporters of the Washington Post. And on the sheet that I have, it'll give the names of the reporters a lot of times. Why don't you get out there and get active and get outraged? I am furious, and I guess you know I am. Enough is enough. He's getting away with too much. So that's all I have to say on that subject this evening. This is Mae Brussel. It's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California. Now we'll make a transition over to the music. I'm sorry. You know what happens? This is we're on the air. It's okay.
Oh, okay.
This is tape for other stations, and all the background noise gets in on the tapes when you're shuffling or moving. That's why I always say, you know, set it up ahead if you want, or otherwise just I'll give you a few minutes when I'm over. They don't care. We'll go right into the music now, and I'll get out of his way. But I get really fussy about the background noise. You'll forgive me, won't
you? Oh, of course I will, May. Thank you very much, May Brussel. It's about 9 p.m. now.